On the way next on 1400 K1. Community Connection this morning brought to you by First Baptist Church and also by Tallgrass Motors. And I get the opportunity to connect a little bit to my telephone with candidate for the 1st Congressional District seat, Kevin Hearn. And in case you haven't noticed it, Congressman Jim Bridenstine self-term limiting, something he promised when he first ran for office. So that will be an open seat. Good morning, Mr. Hearn. Thanks for calling in this morning.
Good morning, Charlie. How are you today?
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, and I get to talk to you this morning, and then later on about 11:30, Phillips 66 will be in town with the Chamber Forum, and we'll hear from the chief executive officer of that company. And so the economy on display this morning, at least locally, when we hear from one of our major employers. And I think that is something that as a businessman, as someone who has experience with several restaurants, McDonald's restaurants around the area, you have something to say about politics and how it affects the economy and how the economy affects political races.
Well, you know, there was once a political strategist that once said it's about the economy, stupid, and, you know, it happened to be of the other party, the Democrat Party, that said that. I think when it gets down to it.
And that president had to keep reminding himself of that every once in a while.
He did. But if you go back and look, when we focused on the economy together in a bipartisan way, we had some of the strongest times. You go back and look at the only time in, last 50 years since World War II that we ran a budget surplus, which is what we'd all love to even get close to today, was back in 1996 when you had the 1994 Congress, when you had people like Tom Coburn and J.C. Watts and many others that were in Congress that went in with an agenda and basically forced bipartisan legislation. And '96, we had a budget surplus.
We did.
That wasn't the only time.
As part of that contract with America that particularly the House, but Congress members ran on in general. And then they kept that promise, which is something we're a little bit used to. I think I can cite several third-party spokespeople who have said that Congressman Bridenstine, you know, told us who he was, told us how he would vote, and then kept those promises. And whether you agreed with him or disagreed with him, you knew who he was and how he was going to vote.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, you have to stay true to your principles in any solution that you come up with. And, you know, Congressman Bridenstine's principles have always been, and many others around the country have been, that we have got to get after this crazy debt that we have. You know, if people are looking at the economy right now, they say, well, things must be going great. I just left a meeting a minute ago, an early morning breakfast with a couple hundred commercial development people, real estate people from around the state, and a lot of euphoria in the room when you ask the question, you know, all small business people, when you ask the question how it's going well, it feels good, you know, we're starting to see a real ramp up, and then I interject politics into the economic equation. I say, but can you tell me one legislative piece of success we've had supports President Trump's energy of restoring our economy, and not one person can, and that's because he is getting zero support right now in any of his economic solutions.
He's got to be
immensely frustrated.
Yeah, I'm sure he has to be, particularly, and he has expressed it even yesterday with John McCain, and John was the deciding vote. He happened to be the one voting at that time that kept that margin from going over where it needed to be. But I think in general, particularly with the Senate, but even somewhat with the House, the president is frustrated by this Congress.
Well, you know, and I you never know why people vote the way they do. One would probably argue that it goes back to the campaign between President Trump and Senator McCain. Who knows? But if you look at just that vote, what that did, and this goes back to the narrative that one person can make a difference. You know, we got Obamacare because of one vote. Now we're keeping Obamacare because of one vote. The first vote was John Roberts. The second vote, Senator McCain. You know, that's the... You know, you're the last vote that, you know, has the opportunity to at least push it to a 50-50 tie, and it doesn't occur. But here's what happens underneath all of this politics as it goes back to the economy. You know, many people are talking about, you know, security, national security. It's every day in our forefront with North Korea, with Iran, and with Syria, and the list goes on with the Russian hacking, the Chinese hacking. The reality is that our economy has a direct impact on our ability to defend ourselves. When you have a debt that's at $20 trillion almost, it'll be there anytime, and your interest that you're paying on your national debt is, you know, it's over $400 billion, and defense spending is $600 billion. there'll be a time in our very near future where our interest in our debt is more than what we're spending on national defense. And, you know, President Eisenhower said it back in the 50s that there has never been a society that's ever been able to sustain itself because of the lack of security when it can't manage its economic house. And so this is a bigger thing than any individual. This is about the sovereignty of our nation, the protection of our nation. And we have to got to put people in D.C. that understand how to come up with solutions, how to understand how these things all fit together, how to prioritize things. And we've got to stop the pettiness of the individual trying to get votes. We've got to understand how this impacts people, and we've got to put people, as you know, many people have said, most lately in our area, you know, Rafael Cruz, Ted Cruz's dad was in town. We have to put people in D.C. that have done what they say they're going to do. And if you're talking about putting somebody in D.C. that's actually worked with large budgets, billion-dollar budgets, and somebody who's employed people and employing thousands of people, and people who have had to experience firsthand the impact of Obamacare, the tax policy that's ever-changing, immigration policies, labor policies, I'm the only guy in the race that does that and has done that. And so, you know, experience matters. The ability to understand how these impact individual employees and other business owners, that matters. And if you don't experience it, the only way you're going to get that is either to watch it on Fox News, watch it on CNN, read it in the Wall Street Journal, you know, Charlie, listen to radio, or, heaven forbid, you know, you go to Washington, D.C. and have somebody up there educate you on how that's supposed to work. And, you know, I think the American people, what we're seeing today is the American people are so frustrated with people saying that they're going to go do something. And they don't get it done. But in all fairness to the people who go up there, if you've never done it, you don't know how to do it. And so, you know, we've got, this is why Trump, I think, is seeing such success in the economy when he really, all he has done is what we have sort of chastised other presidents in the past for, is through executive order. And he needs legislative support. As you are aware, I have a great relationship with Senator Coburn, and, you know, and I've asked him, and even he, you know, all his frustrations with the federal government, is pleased with the underlying economic policies that President Trump is trying to put into place. But he's immensely frustrated with the fact, and he says, you know, the day of reckoning will come when we don't get these put into a legislative process and actually get a law, which will make it much more harder to undo with future, you know, congressional members.
Which, so I think is the problem. Yeah, that's the problem with executive order in general, is that it can be superseded by another executive order.
Exactly. And, you know, and there's so many things that, you know, folks are not recognizing that the strong economy does. I saw an article yesterday where just because of the stock market reaching an all-time high, and many people say, well, that doesn't matter, I don't have any stock. Well, it does matter. It matters a lot, because most, if not all, the pension plans around the country that have been so woefully underfunded and needing money in a worse kind of way are bankrupting a lot of cities. You know, the state of Illinois has got tremendous problems with their pension plans.
Well, and the legislature there has problems with Governor Romner, too, but that's another topic.
Exactly. Well, you know, and so I saw where, just since President Trump had been in office, that the pension plans around America had increased by $4 trillion just because of the inflation, you know, because of the increase in the stock price, the stock Wall Street. So, you know, there's a lot of positives that are coming out of a growing economy. We saw that, many of us that are old enough to experience this. As I mentioned to you, and you and I have talked about this, is when I came out of high school, Ronald Reagan was president. And, you know, he said, you know, it may seem hopeless, and I know people today think it's hopeless, but, you know, he said it may seem hopeless, but it's not. We just have to put the power back into people. We have to give the opportunity for individuals, millions of individuals, to make, you know, their own decisions in the marketplace. And, you know, we'll always have them allocate their resources in the way they see fit, and they'll do it much more efficiently and much more effectively than a centralized government. It just seems to fail every single time, and we just have to be smart about it.
Well, and also, this is something you kind of touched on it. One of the next major things that the Congress, at least, is expected to move forward, and when I talked with a couple of elected officials recently, they would still like to do something with Obamacare, but they know they need to move on now, time-wise, with, first of all, next fiscal year's budget, and also tax policy, tax reform, tax cuts, however you want to word it. And I think that someone that comes to it from a business point of view understands what tax policy can do, or do for, or do to a country.
Well, you know, obviously, when you have leader of the House say, you know, let's pass the bill and then we'll tell you what's in it, you know, 2,700 pages, as we mentioned before, you know, you're trying to do it with a simple 123-page bill, that can only be done if you're simply repealing the bill and starting fresh again. You know, there's clearly, I'm not absolving the Republican Party for, you know, of the responsibility that they should have had. You know, after 7 years, you should have had a replacement in place, you know, anticipating that you're going to win. If you're not anticipating you're going to win, then you never put anything in place. And, you know, I've always come from everything that I've done in business as I'm going to win. And so I'm going to be, when I get the opportunity, we're going to make the plan, put the plan in place we've been waiting on. They didn't do that. And so they've lost a lot of confidence in the American people and in the legislative process. You know, the right thing to do is what they did, actually 61 times, and that was to repeal it. Some would argue that it was purely politics because they knew Obama would never sign something that had his name on it. But, you know, here we are, and we're going to have to undo something very quickly on this, or it's going to be a problem, not only with the health care and health insurance situation in America, but also with the tax policy, as you alluded to. Because built inside of there is about $900 million worth of taxes that were accompanying the health care, Affordable Health Care Act, their Unaffordable Health Care Act. and it has to be undone because there's nowhere to make that up. And that was part of the pay fors to get this to take place. And, you know, so when you start eliminating a lot of the special interests, you know, the VAT tax, the voter adjustment tax went away. Now you've lost the health care initiative. Some would wonder, and the real opportunities to really fix the taxes. You're starting to lose some really big chunks of money, and what you're really going to be able to do with that, because you still have to fund the government. Here's something that, you know, again, going back to the economy, we talk about all these issues we have around the world that are straining our military. If you go back and look at how much of the budget goes to the mandatory spending, you know, Social Security, disability, Medicare, back in the 60s, it was about 20% of the budget. In the 80s, when President Reagan was regaining our military might and strength and pushing forward the Peace Through Strength initiative, it was about 40% of the budget at that time, the federal budget, was going to mandatory spending. About 25% of the budget was spent on building this massive military that we, you know, we had a lot of prosperity and really... We won the Cold War. Today, it's about 60% of the federal budget is going to mandatory spending. So we've jumped every 20 years. We're jumping about 20%. So, you know, just nothing slowing that down. In fact, with the Obamacare, it's actually accelerating. So we're at 60% now. President Trump is spending about 15% of the budget on military spending. And as we know, based on what's happened in the last 8 years with President Obama, it's at the Navy is at the smallest it's been since, you know, World War One. So we've got a major problem in protecting our sovereignty. We got a major problem in protecting our securities, which is basically what we created the Constitution for, was to create an opportunity and a guidelines of how we're supposed to protect the life, liberty, and property of people and the citizens of America. We have got to get this economy fixed. And we have the right president there. We need to get the right House members and Senate members there to make sure that we can support these initiatives to get our economy straightened out.
We're talking this morning with candidate for the 1st Congressional District, Kevin Hearn, and we will continue on a Community Connection coming up in just a minute.
Bartlesville First Baptist Church is focused on the life-changing gospel of Jesus Christ. As we learn the God's Word, love God's people, and live God's mission, this vision will continue to thrive until He comes. We are committed to vibrant worship, relevant Bible teaching, genuine community, and the urgent spreading of this gospel. We are resolved. We will not be silent. Come worship with us at First Baptist Church, 405 South Cherokee in Bartlesville. Services are 8:30 a.m. and 11 a.m. each Sunday.
Is it time to start thinking about a new car? But the thought of dealing with the large dealerships is just too intimidating, too confusing? There is an easier way. Tallgrass Motors. Tallgrass Motors doesn't play all the confusing games the large dealerships play. Tallgrass Motors has continually been voted Bartlesville's best used car dealer year after year. Go by Tallgrass Motors today and enjoy looking at over 60 used cars, trucks, and SUVs, all priced to save you money. Tallgrass Motors, Highway 75 North in Bartlesville.
Continuing our time on a Community Connection on 1400 K1, talking with candidate for the 1st Congressional District seat, Kevin Hearn. We've been talking primarily the economy and how decisions that the government makes affect the business climate, and that translates out into everything from the price of goods and services that you and I pay at the cash register to our income tax return that somewhere around April 15th somebody's going to want to have for us for next year. Kevin, as we look at the task of the federal government, whether we look at trying to do something about the health insurance system. We've always had a good health care system. I think the terminology has gotten confused somewhere over the past few years. We look at the economy. We say we need to do something with tax policy, whether it's tax rates or, again, cleaning up some of the loopholes and ensuring some of the deductions are still doing what they should be doing and that sort of thing. Just in those two areas, Congress has a lot of work in front of it.
They do, Charlie. And, you know, special interest is really a problem. You know, special interest, we tend to think that that's just in tax credit. You know, even in healthcare, there's a lot of special interest. You nailed it. You know, we've really been talking, Obamacare was about health insurance from what we as citizens see. On the backside of this, there's the whole healthcare industry and creating transparency and transparency in services, you know, where we have a lot of aggregation in hospitals and ownership of hospitals. And, you know, I've been, as we'd mentioned in the last show, been endorsed by Insurance Commissioner John Doak, and he and I have regular conversations about what's the latest information, the updates about cross-border purchasing of healthcare and how we can address that. You know, in 2015, the estimation was it was going to be about $3.2 trillion. That's how much money was spent on the healthcare industry. And we have opportunities there as well. As far as looking at this escalation, by 2050, it's estimated it's going to be about $6 trillion, which would, you know, consume our entire budget. So there's no solution that we can't look at that we've got to get this fixed. The issue around the tax policy, you know, there's so many issues surrounding this this narrative of how we repatriate money to bring the large corporations' money and balance sheets back into the United States, get the access to the tax money after that. The situation where we have so much cash sitting on the balance sheets and redeploying that, this really goes back into the confidence of the individual industries that, you know, this economy is going to continue to grow. And this really gets into, you know, workforce. We've heard a lot of conversation around immigration in recent months and recent years about illegal immigration. You know, if you truly believe in the free market capitalism in this country, it's really a supply and demand. If there's a demand for labor and there's an available supply, wages will stay low. From the government's own numbers, if you go back to 2000, the average income for a family, for an individual, is $29,200. You fast forward to now, it's $30,300 when adjusted for inflation. So in sense of real dollar increase, it's only about $1,100 in 17 years. And therein lies the issue we're having with, you know, not a lot of prosperity in America. We've got to do work on immigration. Whether people want to argue the political side of this or not, it does affect what people get paid in America. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've been strong from day one about, you know, securing our southern border through supporting Trump's idea of building a southern border wall. I've also been very supportive of President Trump's idea. We have got to end sanctuary cities. That cannot be a haven of, you know, where cities are allowed to not cooperate with the federal government and allow people that have been deported for doing criminal activity to come back in and live in a sanctuary within the sovereignty of the United States. That is not, that is un-American for those mayors that allow that to happen. I don't care what party you're involved in. That is not how America was ever structured, and that needs to be stopped. And I'm pleased to see that Attorney General Sessions and the President are quickly addressing that. And it will be a battle that shouldn't even have to occur.
I don't really need to invoke the land of Lincoln again, but how dare you disagree with Rahm Emanuel?
Well, it's really disturbing to see what's going on there, especially when you see the troubles they have. You know, I was joking someone the other day that we should be able to buy Illinois, Oklahoma could buy Illinois out of bankruptcy if we could get our fiscal house in order here, because if any state should be bankrupt, it should be Illinois with the problems that they have right now, $15 billion deficit.
Their bonds are just very close to junk bond status right now. I keep track of it because I grew up and used to live there. We've got about a minute and a half or so left, Kevin. I want to make sure the people have the opportunity to catch up with you. I know you have a busy travel schedule. First of all, you're still trying to run a business and also run for office. But I'm sure that you will be back in Washington County sometime over the next few weeks. And I haven't checked it out recently, but you've got a website that's very informative as well.
Yeah. Actually, Charlie, I will see you in about 2.5 hours at the Bartlesville Chamber today. So
okay.
I look forward to seeing you there. And that will be awesome to be back up in Bartlesville today. But yes, HearnForCongress.com, HearnForCongress.com, HernForCongress.com. And I look forward to continue to meet people in Washington County as well as the rest of the First District. Everywhere I go, that's with 100% of the time, it's, you know, people, the citizens get it. We need more business people in Washington, D.C. So that narrative, you know, obviously President Trump's carrying that torch for all the business people around America that are running. And I know he's looking for more support in his initiatives to get things done. And I think this is a season, you know, most business owners, I would say all, really have a lot of other things they could be doing in America, like running their own businesses, taking care of their employees and working alongside them and being a strong leader for them. But, you know, I applaud all of those who have ran and won and those who are running and want to be involved in helping correct the course that we're on and be a part of the solution right now and then leave and go back to their businesses. You know, it's when you have a business at home, that, you know, Washington, D.C. is not your primary source of income. You're a lot more likely to go up there and want to fix a problem, help, you know, correct the course, and then get back to your business. So I look forward to it.
Thank you very much. I'll see you at 11:30. Kevin Hearn with us this morning on AM 1400, 93.3 FM, K1, Community Connection. Let's join news from the Oklahoma News Network.
Names of Confederate generals after a white...